This is The Biz of Wealth. Challenges, rumblings, and evolution of the wealth management industry.
Welcome to Business of Wealth. Today I had the pleasure of sitting down again with Daniel Canel. He was one of my first interviews here in our podcast. He's the chairman of ADCAP, and he's a partner in Holistic Brokerage. That's a broker-dealer and RIA in the U.S. He's a veteran in wealth management, and we had a very interesting conversation about the future of the industry. So without further ado, please enjoy this very innovative conversation with Daniel Canel.
Danny, welcome back to Biz of Wealth.
Thank you for the invitation, having me again. You don't learn.
No, it was one of the first ones and actually one of the most successful ones.
Really?
So that's why
you never told me that.
Yes, yes. So today I want to talk more about the industry in general, because you, of course, have a long trajectory in the industry. So I want to talk about the evolution of wealth management. And my first question is the traditional model and where it's going and what's working and what's not working. What are your thoughts there? Mm-hmm.
First of all, a disclaimer, I have over 20 plus 30 years of experience in the financial industry. Wealth management was one of the areas in which I was involved and late in my career, I must say. My expertise was more on the trading side of the business, capital markets, and fixed income equity and others. But going specifically to your question, Alejandra, I find more issues that are not going to work going forward than those that are working today that are going to stay, if you know what I'm saying. I still believe very strongly that the personal relationship between, let's call them from now on FAs, bankers, and clients is here to stay. It's extremely positive and it's working, and clients need that. I see it as a guy running a wealth management unit and as a guy being a client of banks. Second, what up to now has been a friendly experience for clients should continue going that way. People take very seriously the business of managing their money or monitoring the management of their money. So they need to feel very close to the banker and trust the person as a member of the family. And there are some new things like robo-advisors and some aspects of the use of algorithms and technology that are brand new that obviously are here to stay. On the other side, there are a long list of issues that sooner or later, in my view, will have to disappear. Number one, standard systems that do not take into consideration a specific characteristic of each client. There is a tendency, particularly in large institutions, to go that on that venue. Second, the tendency to keep increasing high costs, which indeed takes me to the next point, which is lack of transparency. We don't see clearly how much we're being charged, and therefore sometimes we get surprised. So in terms of the large institutions, they will have to find a solution to the fact that they typically offer their own products. And when someone is forced to offer third-party products, the cost is extremely high. That equilibrium was not reached yet and has to be found somehow. Obviously, the conflict of interest, particularly again for large institutions, is an issue that is not clear yet. And finally, again, in large places, the tendency to pretend to cover all the asset classes, even those that are not covered by the institution in the research department. I think the example of the Bitcoin for the wrong, or the crypto for the wrong reasons, is one good example of things they do not cover and they do not talk about. In that front, they're doing the right thing, not because of the asset class called crypto, but because they do not have the research on it.
So basically, you're saying that you should not cover assets because you should be an expert on the assets that you cover.
at least to have the alternative to talk to your client and explain specifically everything that you're trying to sell. That is also, you bring me to another point, which is sometimes the FA is a translator from the specialized group in the bank and the client. And the client doesn't feel so comfortable with the guy on the other end because he knows only the intermediary guy. And that becomes a conflict for the relationship.
A lot of the things you're mentioning are problems. The cost, the personalization, the lack of personalization, the lack of transparency, or the lack of independence and the conflict of interest. What do you think, you know, those are all things that need to change, mm-hmm. all things that are changing already.
Indeed.
At some point, and some are, you know, are taking longer than others. Mm-hmm. But what do you think is staying? What do you think is not going to change in wealth management?
Well, as I said, personal attention is critical, has to stay. There should continue having in some aspects quick and effective responses to clients. There is a group of institutions focusing on tailor-made solutions for each client, and that is a very good initiative that I see staying. Insisting in idea generation, this is a concept that I bring up in every meeting that I have. Clients should be forced to understand the value of idea generations, and institutions should be continue focusing on that. And also the ability to show or to offer a specific research on a specific products. Those are aspects of wealth management that are in some institutions. Let's not get into which one is working, which one is not working. This is like a common factor of items that are working that need to stay. On the other hand, I see things that should not be there anymore. Clearly, the fixed structures with bureaucracy that typically the client is at the end of the list. I've seen a large number of occasions in which the client is expecting an answer from the banker. The banker doesn't get an answer from the compliance department or the legal department. That is a nightmare, and it's going to take me in a minute to another point. FAs should leave altogether the idea of taking clients to markets or asset classes where they don't have enough knowledge, so they have the feeling that the thing is going to work. It doesn't work like that anymore. Markets are very sophisticated. We have a lot of techniques, even technical analysis, which has grown in popularity in the last 5 years, that someone has to tell these FAs, make sure that when you sell something, you are convinced yourself about the quality, the pluses and the minuses of each product. When I mentioned to you the client sometimes is at the end of the list, the best example that comes to my mind is the fact that there is a tendency in large financial institutions in having the compliance department playing a much higher role than what I think common sense will tell you would have to play. And the conflict of the compliance department going in one direction and the commercial department going in a different direction is something that eventually will have to find an equilibrium. Because at the end of the day, and I obviously understand all the technicalities and the potential issues, and FINRA and the SEC, and when I talk to the CEO of our broker-dealer or the RIA, I feel and I understand their concern. Because the client sometimes is too far away from me, the FA is in between, and I better cover myself. As I said, in large institutions, this is an unbelievable problem. Go and try to do something as simple as transfer euros in a very small amount from one bank to another person in Europe, and then you have to talk to 5 human beings. Mm-hmm. So that's something that hopefully technology will take us to a better place.
What do you envision for the compliance process then?
Because I wish I would have the answer because I would make a lot of money. But what I think is, I think we have to work on the education and the continuous education process of the compliance people, a subject of equilibrium, common sense, I don't know, to keep we are working with one client, you cannot bring up the issue all the time. I know what I'm saying is controversial. Obviously, it is. But if you do not find a common ground for speeding up the certain processes, you're going to be running in terms of your ability to keep and get new clients in the, at the back of the line. And I know that it's a case by case, it's individual by individual, but the FA has to learn that too. It's not as simple as this guy says yes or no, let me debate, let me understand why it's yes or no. What are we doing that the regulators may not understand? That's another factor that we have to keep into consideration. They're working with the regulators. In our experience, I mean, they look at us, they see what we do. I mean, we don't have the size of others, but we do things properly. And I don't remember having any fine in the firm, but it's because we try to manage that equilibrium.
So before going into another question, I wanted to ask you what you mentioned about personal attention and tailor-made products. So, when we're talking about cost, there's a fee war that started more than almost a decade ago that is pushing costs down and, you know, making everybody just fight for the fees. And that in turn has made a lot of the players go for numbers, go for a massive approach to wealth management with the use of technology. Mm-hmm. So how do you do that while keeping a person's attention? So a firm that used to manage seven families or, you know, accounts, now, you know, with the fees that they have to go down and down, mm-hmm. has to go into 30, 40 accounts.
When you say fees, you mean the fee for the you charge to the client, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Then it's not that complicated of a question. I was agreeing with your statement until you mentioned the use of technology to reduce the cost. The use of technology, it is obviously a tool that helps you out in reducing the cost, but it's not the focus of what I was thinking, in terms of a specific niche product. The reason we are talking about alternative products, which is the name of the game, is because we are, and we may continue living in a low margin, low interest rates scenario. Therefore, not everybody has the appetite for jumping into equities from one day to the other, and therefore getting the type of returns that you may be able to get in the equity market. What I was thinking is more, there are opportunities and specific products that you should identify within the clientele that you have. If I manage retail accounts and I want to develop a standard tailor-made product in pre-IPOs, most likely I'm not going to sell any. Forget about the regulatory front for 1 second. It's mixing apples and oranges. Therefore, if you have the ability to identify those products, those value-added products, where, by the way, you can charge in a real estate transaction, for example, a success fee to the client with a watermark of a benchmark rate, whatever you want to call it, I've seen clients willing to pay a fee, a very happy fee, because I'm a partner of the guy. I have in some cases, there is also protection to the downside. And you don't jump into the simplicity of putting all your clients in mutual funds or in selected managers, because what you want to do is you work less and you want someone else to take the responsibility for the assets to go up or down. You see what I'm saying? So yes. That is the thing. Clients are not against paying fees for value-added ideas or products. Clients are fed up of paying fees for a stupid lack of a appealing financial ideas.
Where do you see? I see that you see the future in alternative investments of, you know, unique ideas.
Yeah.
Where do you see everything go? How do you see the model working, like the success?
Well, I imagine the scenario that, and we can touch on this issue later. I see like a sort of two well-defined avenues for where the industry is going to go. We're going to continue having the big banks and the big financial institutions trying to deal with their own issues. Frankly, it's going to be tough for these people to keep growing at the level that they're growing, with some exceptions, I would say. And I see also small and decentralized organizations being created with the flexibility to attend customer needs. I imagine those decentralized organizations to have a strong focus on technology for digital solutions, use of algorithms and stuff like that. I imagine boutiques specialized in ultra high network individuals, because those guys share common needs. And I also imagine the second channel, more quick, fast, easy to adapt to a very fast changing market environment. So I imagine the change more in this second type of institutions than in the first one. The first ones, let me give you an example. If you have someone in Peru, Chile, Argentina trying to send money out of the country, the very first step in most cases is going to be big financial institutions, if compliance, again, allows to be the case. I know that the presence of Pershing makes everybody look the same way, but it's not quite like that once you get into what to do with the money you have there. You know what I'm saying? So I imagine that the second group is when you're going to see the major growth, major diversification in terms of this product distribution that I think is where the industry is going, and we will talk more about that later.
Okay, go ahead. So most of the market will be taken by boutiques, specialized.
Well, I'm not taken by boutiques. That's a very strong statement, to be honest. it's gonna be more. Lately I've seen aggregators of broker dealers or aggregators of RIAs, but mainly a broker dealer. And that is a business of volume. And I wonder how profitable it is. So I believe that if I'm building a business of volume, it's because I expect someone to jump in and buy my portfolio of billions under management. But the valuation would be based on assets under management, not based on money that I make. You call it fees, but I call it money that I make. Money is money at the end of the day.
The revenue,
but what I'm saying is it's more focused on, if I'm going into that direction, is because I expect to be gathering assets.
Right.
I believe that the industry will move more to what I call a factory of products, or a factory of financial products, where you offer clients. Then we can discuss the venue or the vehicle that would take you there. But to me, if you ask me today, what I think every morning, even if I may not be doing within our company, is how do I create a selected list of products that could be appealing to bring FAs and clients to talk to me? Could be clients, could be through FAs. But that idea of product orientation is the most critical and the most potentially profitable in the wealth management industry. And those products may be linked to different industries, could be linked to real estate, to potential financial transactions, pre-IPOs. There are many different alternatives where clients are financing operations in local currency in Colombia or in Peru, things that are not traditionally brought to the attention of players in the traditional markets.
So, okay, let me summarize what I understood and challenge it. You're saying that we're going from a model in which all asset managers were trying to just raise AUM and, you know, make big, big funds or whatever, you know, structure they had, into one that you want to create a wide variety of products that are highly specialized, from what you told me before.
Yes.
And they're attractive to different segments of clients. That entails much more education to the face of the client, doesn't it? Like, it
yes, it does.
Require Absolutely. A lot of education to each client.
Yes, and education to the bankers as well. As I said before, if these guys, if I need them to be able to distribute my products and I want to buy a piece of the action of each client with my ideas, I need them with me. Instead of saying, you know, the same way, let me give you a good example. Good firms do not try to do private equity. Help clients to find the best private equity managers, right? Well, the same is valid for this idea of very specialized products. I'm not saying the industry is going there as a whole. I'm saying that is the aspect of the industry where I see the most money to be made, which is more important than say where the industry is going, I believe, no? If I'm in the audience and a guy is telling me, how do I make money going forward? Well, I'm sharing my view.
Perfect.
Just because of you.
But I feel honored. So the launching of products, how do you go about it? So do you go with what's going on? For example, right now, a lot of people, if you tell me, okay, what product should I be launching? Well, of course, you should be launching some cryptocurrency or something.
Crypto arbitrage, for example.
Do you go with what's on, you know, on mainstream right now, or what do you think about?
No. For each industry or asset class, you have experts, right? I know guys that do the real estate structuring, origination, restructuring, and distribution of real estate really well. I happen to know them, and I sell them that way. Clients should go that way on that front. Then for the you mentioned crypto arbitrage ideas. We're looking at a couple of guys that are very good at doing that already, and with a, I'm not going to say a long track record because there is no such a thing as a long track record, but a good track record, I must say. And the same is valid for financing of specific structures in deals of proportion. We are working on a number of them where hedge funds are playing a role that eventually sophisticated wealth management clients could play. And also, I think it's relevant when you jump into this to be able to cover the legal, tax, and otherwise fronts that the client may be facing. Again, I'm not trying to sell this as a, eventually, this could be sold to retail clients in a different format, but I'm more focused on high network individuals that are going to be able to benefit the most and the firms that are more linked to that aspect of the business, right?
So basically, it's a process of analyzing the different verticals and finding the right partners to launch each product.
Yes. Once you have that chain in place, the clients will be looking for you.
Okay. Because how do you make an asset management firm that's doing that constantly? Do you design your own proprietary product launch process? Or
I think it's a combination. We don't have the right formula. We're thinking that one way to do it is to have certain working agreements with RIAs in Latin America and then your factory interacting with those bankers. That could be the easiest way to do it, no? Because you're going to be able to have a permanent audience, at least to listen to your ideas and to see your products. Then success will tell as always, if you are going to be on top of the list for every time you send an email or a note with a specific idea, or you're simply falling behind because you are not good at either originating, identifying, or executing them. But that is a basic ABC, right?
Right. But your audience should also be mostly independent RIAs, because the banks, as you were saying, they're much slower.
Obviously, because for the banks, it's a super conflict. And I don't want to insult banks. I work with them and I love them and they lend me money and I'm happy with that. But I tend to see, I have very good professionals working in specialized firms, and they bring us typically the best ideas.
Okay. And how do you present it? So you train the bankers. How do you make sure that those are products that the clients will be open to hear about?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm simply a believer that if you explain the benefits of being invested in a certain product, take the case of real estate, say you buy the argument of higher rates and you buy the argument, forget about the temporary, non-temporary inflation dilemma that we have today on the table. Let's assume for a second that you are a believer that 4 is higher than 2 and the 4% whatever is going to stay. Then you explain that in order to facilitate the management of the deficit of the U.S., the depreciation of certain currencies is also the way to go. And then you make the case that real estate is potentially the best protection to those two scenarios that you believe you may be facing. Then you explain to the guy, if he's still paying attention to you, that there is a possibility to benefit for participating in this structure that is not that complicated, has a life of 2-3 years, and that is based on geographical or geopolitical factors that could benefit rentals versus owning, whatever. What I'm saying is, it's a process of thinking about how to structure how to be convinced yourself first, and then structure it in a way that clients, first the FA, and then the clients will listen to you, rather than debating or investing time in offering products that are more standard, less appealing, where the fee issue becomes an issue, right? Mm-hmm. I'd rather spend time trying to convince them to work, to go in this direction, than going in the traditional path where they're going to confront traditional problems and traditional returns, if you know what I mean.
So let's close with this. What do you envision for the next 6 months? So I don't believe in long term. I think that 1 year is long term now.
You mean from the market standpoint or from what front?
Yeah, what do you see in general? What do you see happening?
Well, I mean, I think is we will continue confronting. There is one way to look at markets, Alejandra, that gets killed when you have the elephant in the room called the Federal Reserve. Yeah. Imagine what we were saying, and I believe we spoke about it, what the market was going to be in the COVID atmosphere, right? And everybody that I spoke with told me, and we agreed, that it was going to be a disaster. Nobody had in mind this spectacular participation, spectacular could be good or bad, if you know what I'm saying, by the Federal Reserve, and creating this super wealth to people that were already rich in the equity markets. So the way you unwind not only the size of the balance sheet, but also tapering, interest rate, and all that, and you stop with the subsidies, and you stop with the subsidy to the business and to the workplace in the form of unemployment, is something we don't know which way is going to go. And effectively, some economies are thinking that inflation is one way to liquidate the deficit, and it was the case in many countries in Latin America historically, the depreciation of the currency, as I just said. So the next 6 months are tricky, to be honest, because it's is we have the elephant in the room. So if you tell me what Mr. Powell is going to do in terms of the all these factors that I just mentioned, I can tell you my feeling is that they will, and as I learned in reading and in podcasts, the Federal Reserve was never a good leading indicator of things historically. It is a good lagging indicator. And I believe that this time around will not be the exception, and we will not see the light at the end of the tunnel coming from the Fed, but the market will show us on the numbers, and macro, microeconomic numbers will tell you the way it's going to go. My feeling is that we're going to end up with higher inflation, perhaps not at the annualized rate of the one that was announced yesterday, but effectively we're going to see a rebalancing of the portfolios in a way that will reflect higher rates and higher inflation rates. And there will be, I see more rebalancing again between fixed income and equity. And I expect also to have continue having the technology companies a critical role in future economic growth. Mm-hmm. The COVID was a way of shortening up the life of an expected recession, and a way of speeding up the recovery process. So we're in the middle of the thing with the elephant in the room, and I think FAs maybe better be thinking in products that are linked to the potential scenarios that I believe will be confronting, and the industry will continue adjusting, because I don't see a reshape of the wealth management industry to take place in 6 months, obviously. I see a lot of interest, though, in European institutions and looking into the U.S. and Latino markets. And that's also something of interest. Yes, I'm surprised. I had two conversations of people. Perhaps the lack of action in Europe, the inaction of Europe, and what they see America and the money potentially moving between geographies in Latin America calling their attention.
Yeah.
We better have long-term players. We've seen already what happened with people touch and go, you know, in particularly European banks.
But you mentioned something interesting. You said the wealth management is not going to be transformed in the next 6 months. Do you think that the speed of the wealth management transformation is also given by the lack or the complacency of clients too, and the appetite for just stay the course?
No. I think it's lack of understanding of the changes by the decision makers. We tend to, the typical client, I'm not a typical client for the institution that I work with, but I know that. It's not that I should be happy or unhappy. I simply should know it. Do not tell you the speed or the type of the decisions. They are typically driven by the bankers, and it may take time for them to understand in which direction we're going to be moving. And I don't blame them. It's rather difficult to believe that one scenario is going to happen or not. What I really see is, I don't want to be insisting, but it's focusing on those products that, independently of the scenario, clearly are adding value to a client.
That's great.
And I don't know how many firms or how many groups will, ours, yes, because we force ourselves to think out of the box and to think in solutions all the time.
That's really interesting. Great. Okay.
Thank you very much for the time. And for your audience, and let's continue. I hope this will be successful.
I'll have you back for sure.
Absolutely. We'll be back. Bye.